Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Ogletree Deacons California Podcast. My name is Charles Thompson. I am a shareholder in the San Francisco office, co-chair of the Leave of Absences and Reasonable Accommodation Practice Group, and also I'm a trial attorney. With me today, I have got my good friend, Betsy Johnson. Betsy, how are you?
I'm good, Charles. How are you?
Everybody, I asked Betsy to send me all the nice things you would like me to say about her. And she said, oh, just say whatever you want, but I reserve the right to deny it. So, Betsy, I don't think that you're going to deny anything that I'm going to say. Betsy is a shareholder in the Los Angeles office. She and I have known each other for a number of years. She used to be the managing partner in the office. She is or has been on the firm's management committee. She's in the California Advice Group. She's also served on the firm's Professional Development Steering Committee. She practices in the areas of federal and state wage and hour, employee compensation, discrimination, harassment, discipline termination, and she also does some traditional labor work as well. Isn't that right, Betsy?
That's correct.
And I read in your bio that you used to play basketball for your college. Do you still play?
Not anymore. The knees don't let me do it. I mean, I will toss the occasional crumpled up piece of paper into the waste bin, but that's about it.
Yeah, I've seen that. That wasn't pretty, by the way. Okay, so today we're going to talk about the California Fair Chance Act and really the new regulations that the California Fair Employment and Housing Council has issued about them. Betsy, why don't we start off here? Can you just tell us what the Fair Chance Act is? What is that?
So, Charles, and thank you for saying such nice things about me. And I will reciprocate by saying that Charles, being the host of these podcasts, Charles doesn't get to toot his own horn, but he is just a wonderful friend and a fabulous lawyer. So now we're even, Charles.
Yes, I need you to tell my parents that. Go ahead.
So the California enacted the Fair Chance Act in 2018. And the thrust of the act is to set out parameters and prohibitions on what employers can ask applicants and candidates about criminal history and how they can use any information about criminal history in the hiring process. And so the Fair Chance Agreement is otherwise known as Ban the Box. And as many of you probably know, several states have enacted similar laws. In California, we even have some local laws in San Francisco and Los Angeles that also have the same prohibition. So it is designed, the public policy behind the act is to allow applicants or individuals with criminal histories, especially those people who serve time in prison, to reintegrate into the workforce without the stigma of a conviction clouding the application and interview process.
Great. Thanks for that explanation. But I have a question. I mean, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic, lots of mass layoffs, companies are closing, et cetera. So, I mean, is the Fair Chance Act really relevant these days?
I'm the eternal optimist. So I believe that, over time, and, you know, we're seeing a little bit of it now, that employers will start hiring again. We've seen a lot of mobility especially in the high level positions. There's already people moving around. So I do believe that the Fair Chance Act is something that employers cannot forget about. as they try to recover, you know, their workforce or increase their workforce as the pandemic hopefully winds down.
Okay. Well, tell us, what does the Fair Chance Act prohibit?
First of all, it prohibits employers from including any questions on the application or asking for information about an individual's criminal history before the applicant receives a conditional offer of employment. The reason, you may know, the reason why this is called ban the box, because employers historically had that question on applications that said, have you ever been convicted of a crime or have you ever been convicted of a felony? And the box is yes or no. So that question cannot be on any applications in California. And beware, please check your online applications if you're using the same one across the country and have not removed this question from the California application that that needs to be done as soon as possible. It also prohibits employers from asking or considering a criminal conviction before, again, the applicant receives a conditional offer of employment. In addition, under the labor code, and this provision has been around for a while, 432.7, employers cannot consider any arrests that did not result in a conviction. There are some exceptions. And they can't consider an applicant's participation in any pretrial or post-trial diversion programs, and they cannot consider any convictions that have been sealed, dismissed, or expunged. So basically, criminal history is off limits during the interview and recruiting process.
Great. Thanks, Betsy. Now, what are the employer's rights and obligations under the Fair Chance Act?
So under the Act, the employer can only, as I've mentioned, obtain the criminal history from an applicant after a conditional offer of employment has been made. Once they've done that, then they can go through the traditional background check, which would include a criminal history check. And the results of that will then come back to the employer, who then will consider whether or not the conviction should disqualify the applicant for the job. The law and the regulations adopted a similar criteria for use by employers as the EEOC has had for a number of years now. For denying or rescinding an offer of employment, the employer must consider and must be on an individualized basis. So you can't have a blanket rule that says we do not hire felons. You can't have that blanket rule unless you're covered by certain laws that allow you to do that. So on an individualized basis, the employer must consider the nature and the gravity of the offense and conduct, the time that's passed since the offense and the completion of the employee's or the applicant's sentence, and the nature of the job held or sought. And the key one there is that third one. There has to be some job-related reason why this conviction should disqualify the individual. So, for example, if you're hiring a controller and that person has a conviction for embezzlement in the last, 7 years, now that would be a good reason would be a good reason to rescind the offer to that person. On the other hand, if you have an applicant who's applying for a non-driving job, and they have a DUI on their record, that should not necessarily exclude them from the position they're seeking. Once the employer decides to rescind the offer, then there are specific things that the employer has to do. First and foremost, there needs to be a written notification of preliminary decision to rescind the offer. And that a notification has to include a copy of the conviction record history. It has to provide the applicant with an explanation that they have the right to respond within and be given at least 5 days to do so, to provide additional information for consideration by the employer. And that could include any kind of evidence or information that would be helpful to the employer in making a final determination. If the employer still decides to rescind the offer, then the employer must provide yet a final notice to the applicant, which then also include an explanation of any existing procedures that the employer has in place that would allow the applicant to challenge the decision, as well as notification of the applicant's right to file a complaint with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing. So, and all of this has to happen in a fairly short period of time. So it's not something that we can, push out over weeks and weeks of time. It all has to happen in a fairly short period of time. So those are the basic obligations and requirements of the Act.
Well, that sounds like it could be a complicated process.
It could be, and it is one of those where it is rife for I gotchas by plaintiff's lawyers, and we have seen numerous cases like that, where there's been technical noncompliance, and that gives you an I gotcha.
And the forms that you were talking about, if an employer didn't want to create his or her own form, are they online?
Yes, but also the Department of Fair Employment and Housing on its website has sample forms that can be used for these notifications.
Great. And so what are the remedies? I mean, if an employer violates the law, what are the remedies?
Well, the individual could get lost wages. So if they didn't get the job and they, had they gotten the job, they would have earned $50,000 a year, but they now can't find another job at that level, then they'd be entitled to any kind of lost wages. They could also, the employer could also be ordered to actually hire the person. And if it's a situation with an internal employee who's applying for like a promotion and the employer requires a criminal history check, the court could order the employer to promote the individual based on that. In addition, you have your typical California remedies of emotional distress damages. And of course, the big ticket item is the attorney's fees. And that's what gives the plaintiff's bar an impetus to bring these kinds of cases.
Okay. Now, the Fair Employment and Housing Commission issued amended regulations about Ban the Box. And can you tell us about those?
Sure. So the regulations went into effect on October 1st of 2020. So they were kicking around at, under consideration for quite a while, and they went through various iterations. But the final amended regulations are effective now. And the new regulations, the highlights are, of the new regulations are that the definition of applicant has been expanded to include individuals who were conditionally offered employment, but the employer put them to work while the background check was pending, and then after the so those people would be considered applicants even though you already started working them. Now, why is this important? Well, some employers decided one of the ways to get around the Ban the Box was the if we put the person to work right away and then basically terminate them, we're not, once the results come in, we're not violating the Act. Well, that is not the case anymore. So, and in addition, I never recommend that employers should start employees working before the background check is completed. That's just a recipe for disaster. They also deal with unions and labor contractors, which is a narrow thing. The regulations say that labor contractors and union hiring halls have to follow these regulations. And then when they send employees to the employer for work, the employer still has to comply with the regulations and the law. Finally, the new regulations say that any employee who went through some kind of a diversion program, like for drugs and alcohol, and they have successfully completed that program, while you cannot consider that to deny someone employment, you can consider it as a mitigating factor to, in fact, give them the job. So all in all, the regulations are in line with the fundamental purpose of the law, which is to remove barriers to employment for people with criminal histories.
Great. Now, the Department of Fair Employment and Housing also issued frequently asked questions. Now, what are those?
The FAQs from the Department of Fair Employment and Housing are a summary. They're in an FAQ form, that asks similar questions to what Charles has been asking me, and that provides a shorthand commentary of how the Department of Fair Employment would enforce the law. Now, I have to caution employers. The FAQs are a great desk reference. They're an easy way to kind of key into some of the important issues here. But the FAQs are not law. They do not carry any weight in any kind of litigation. So you have to go back to the actual law itself and the regulations to get the final word on how to handle these situations under the Fair Chance Act.
Great. Now, the frequently asked questions are online, right?
That is correct. You go to dseh.ca.gov. You'll key right into that website, or you can do Google research and just type in DFEH FAQs Fair Chance Act, and that'll get you there a little bit faster.
And that's what I was going to actually suggest. And they'll also find the forms that you mentioned earlier, the templates, right?
Yes.
Great.
Yes, those are all online too.
Great. So now you mentioned early on that a couple of cities, San Francisco, where I am, in Los Angeles, where you are, have local ordinances to deal with, ban the box. So can you tell us a little bit about those? And do those, by the way, if an employer is in either of those cities, what does it comply with, the state law or the local ordinance?
Well, let's start with that question first, because I think that's the key part here. So San Francisco has its own ordinance. The city of L.A. has its own ordinance. The county of Los Angeles has its own ordinance. All three of these ordinances are similar to the statewide Fair Chance Act, but there are some, variations in each of the ordinances that employers need to be cognizant of when they're recruiting and hiring individuals in those areas. We don't have time to go through all of the differences between the laws, but there's some differences that are significant enough that could cause problems for employers if they don't follow the specific local regulations. Now, which one prevails? It's going to be, generally speaking, whatever ordinance is more favorable to the applicant or individual. And so in these cases, the local ordinances would generally trump the statewide law.
Yeah, I know in San Francisco, part of the ordinance says that job postings have to include something specific about that, you won't discriminate on the basis of a prior criminal conviction. Anything like that in the Los Angeles ordinance?
We don't go quite that far in Los Angeles. I mean, I would say that L.A., and I don't have the L.A. ordinance in front of me, so I can't quote you line and verse, but there are some nuances in the notices that need to be provided and timing.
Okay, great. Anything else you'd like to add about the ordinances, the frequently asked questions, or the law itself?
Just as I mentioned up front, this is something that, is not necessarily top of mind for employers as they're bringing people back to work or hiring new workforce. But it is something to be mindful of, especially if you furloughed people or laid them off and you're recalling them. If you're putting them through another background check, and you don't have to, of course, if you don't want to, but if you are, then these rules apply. And you never know what might have happened over the years, since somebody started working for you, and now you're rehiring them and conducting a new background check. So there may be things that pop up that will implicate the Fair Chance Act as well as the local ordinances.
Right. And the EEOC and the state and Los Angeles and San Francisco take this very, very seriously. So it's important to follow the rules.
Absolutely. And I have several of these cases right now.
So, Betsy, thank you again. It's always great to hang out with you. I'm definitely going to invite you to do another one of these things. Everybody else, thanks very much for listening in. And we'll have another California podcast up probably in a week or 10 days. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.